My peoples, welcome to Rant and Randomness. I'm Lovey Ajayi Jones, and this is my show where I'm talking about things that I'm loving, things that I'm side-eyeing, and having great conversation with really dope people. I'm here at the Chicago Recording Company, bringing y'all the radio voice as always. And on this episode, my feel-good is the fact that the holidays are here. I actually really do love Christmas time. I rant about the glorification of home ownership and spotlight Humans of New York. My guest is the brilliant, incomparable Ty Beauchamp. So let's jump into it. All right, so my feel good is that the holidays are here. I actually am somebody who loves Christmas time. People are nicer, everything is sparkly, kids try to behave because they think Santa's gonna bring them some gifts. It's definitely my favorite time of the year. I think there's something special in the air about the holidays, and it's mainly because people are more reflective. People seem to be kinder, and they realize, okay, you know what, the year's almost over. It's also a moment for you to kind of recalibrate and say, like, what have I done this year? Can I finish the year off on a very positive thing? I think about the holidays. I'm always drinking hot cocoa. The food is always good. Now, here's the thing about the holidays. We be doing a lot with food during the holidays, but if we just keep it to the 2 weeks around the holidays, I think we'd be okay. Some people be doing a lot for like 6 weeks. It puts us back. But anyway, and Chicago's is a city that really celebrates the holidays. Like, our streets are lined with lights, and we do parades, and every store has Christmas trees. I said I was going to get a Christmas tree this year because I haven't really done one in a long time. I typically travel out of town for Christmas, and this year I'm actually going to be spending Christmas in Chicago, enjoying my city. So I'm going to get a Christmas tree. I might wear corny Christmas pajamas, and y'all going to have to deal. It's just good. I'm glad that holidays is coming. People are winding down. We all going to get less emails, which is something to be thankful for. And yeah, you know, it gives us a chance to kind of look into what we want to accomplish moving forward. I don't necessarily use just the holidays as a trigger to be better, but it is something that compels you to say, all right, let me make sure that I am being positive, that I'm being kinder, that I am waking up a little bit more chipper. So, yeah, feeling good about the holidays, and I hope whatever you celebrate or if you don't celebrate, I hope you end up finding, you know, people that you love around you, that you end up eating, the foods that bring you joy that don't necessarily clog your arteries, and that you get things and gifts that actually make a difference. And also, if you can, donate something to somebody who is in need. Use this holidays to give to charity, you know, purge and donate things to Goodwill or wherever is ethical for you. And yeah, let's give more than we're going to take this holidays to. So my rant this week is about home ownership and the glorification of home ownership. Just like people glorify entrepreneurship, I'm seeing a lot of glorification of having to own a home. Now, here's the thing. I am not saying it is bad to own a home. I own one. What I'm saying that I'm seeing a lot of is people using home ownership as some barometer of adulthood. Here's the thing. Home ownership, it can be a wealth-building tool if owning that home will not bankrupt you, or if you won't be sitting in an empty 1,500, 2,000 square foot space just to be able to say, I own a place. I'm just seeing that some of the posts that on social media are making people feel bad for renting, talking about, like, you're just flushing money down the toilet. Maybe that person just isn't sure where they're going to set their roots. Maybe the person isn't sure where they want to live in the next 2 to 3 years. Maybe they're doing their best to make sure their student loans and other bills are paid, right? Plus, here's the thing about mortgages, okay? People tend to think that homeownership just means mortgage. No. Also means homeowner's insurance, property taxes, plus money it takes to fix things that break, because things always break. So I just want people to be more cognizant of not letting the internet or memes or anyone's security complex force them into a 15 or 30 year anchor that they can't afford. And I owned my place. I waited 32 years to buy my first place. And it was the right choice because before then, me buying a place would have probably put me in a bind. Like, renting for a long time was great. I loved renting because whenever something breaks, somebody else's job is to fix it. Now, when you are your own landlord and it is becoming wintertime and all of a sudden your furnace stops blowing hot air, you can't call nobody and say, hey, can you come fix this furnace and not worry about how much you're going to have to pay? Yes, I just had to spend $550 for a 15-minute fix to my furnace. I said, I don't even want to be my own landlord. In those moments, you really realize that people aren't given the clear idea of what it takes to own a home. We're just memifying what adulthood should look like. You know, I don't want people to think that they're a failure if they're an adult who has not bought property or who's just renting, because it might be the best decision for you. And I want to be cognizant of the fact that as we are making people feel bad about the decisions that make the most sense for them, are we also giving them the full story? So, yeah, I talked about this on Facebook and Instagram recently, and a lot of people were like, absolutely, like, it makes no sense for me to buy a house, but some people try to make me feel bad about it. I actually got a message from somebody who said, I just wanted to say thank you. I came across a post you made on Facebook about home ownership and how people make you feel less than for being an adult and owning a house. I'm 32 and I was starting to feel bad. I wasn't doing something right because owning a home just isn't something that I want to do. And with all of my friends buying homes and continuously asking me when I will, it was beginning to be too much. So thank you for that post. It really helped ground me in what I want and what's best for me at this time in my life. Yeah. So if you're listening to this, if you're somebody who in certain moments you think you are somehow failing because you don't own property or you're renting and you're fine with it, don't let the internet make you feel bad. Home ownership comes with a lot. It's absolutely the right decision for some people based on how much money you have, what city you live in, what state of affairs, you know, where you are, do you have kids? It might be right decision, but a lot of times it's not, and renting is what makes most sense. So, yeah, I want us to stop glorifying these things, stop telling just half stories, and also not overgeneralize the fact that we did something in a particular way or on a particular timeline means everybody else should do the same. So, yeah, let's stop that. Shout out to the renters. You should call your landlord right now just because you can and just figure out something that you want them to fix because it won't cost you money. Meanwhile, the rest of us who own a place, we got to think through, like, okay, do I want to paint right now? Do I want to replace the microwave that's broken? Do I want to actually get this furnace upgraded even though it's not doing good enough? Call your landlord. Shout out to you for having a landlord that you can call to do these things for you. So my spotlight this week is Humans of New York. It is a photo platform and it's incredible. It's nothing like I've really ever seen. There's a lot of people who have tried to attempt what Humans of New York is doing, but they really can't. It was started by photographer Brandon Stanton, who set out on a mission to photograph 10,000 New Yorkers on the street and create a photo catalog of New York's people, the flesh and bones that make up that city. And he started with that intention, but it quickly grew. I remember I was following Humans of New York on Facebook before he had 1 million followers. And now he has, like, I think something like 15 million. Oh, 18 million. Yeah. So even though it started on the streets of New York, it quickly expanded. People invited him to come to their cities and document them, and soon it became international. He meets people on the street, and I think he just tells them, so tell me your story. And a lot of things that come out, some of them are really funny. Some of them are really tragic. Some of them are really romantic. Some are gut-wrenching. Some are the types of stories that you can never forget. His work, I honestly think it should win a Pulitzer Prize because it's brilliant. It's simple but brilliant, but it's really not simple because ultimately it teaches us that our stories merge us. Our stories unite us. No matter who you are, where you're from, you have a story to tell. doesn't matter how ordinary or extraordinary you think it is. He did a series where he went to the continent. He went to Africa, and he went to Rwanda, he went to Ghana, he went to Nigeria. The Rwanda portion of his piece, it was heart-wrenching because he interviewed people who were survivors of the Rwandan genocide back in 1994, when I believe like a million people died in 3 months. It just held onto my spirit. It held onto my spirit. And Brandon is now back in New York documenting, and he recently went ultra super viral because he ended up getting the best subject. A woman named Stevie Johnson, who used to be a stripper back in the day, and she told stories about everything she was up to, and she instantly caught the eyes of the whole internet. I instantly became obsessed with Lady Tangiray. Tangiray was her stripper name back in the day. Her boldness, her brashness, she has such an amazing story that I instantly went on I need to have her on Rants and Randomness. I need to interview her. I need to find this woman. I'm working on it, y'all. If I can get Stevie Johnson, Miss Stevie Johnson on Rants, I will. And really, I want to actually write her memoir. I think my wordsmithing, her stories, and my insistence on making sure that her story is done justice, I would love to write her memoir. So I'm putting that out there in the universe, and I'm hoping that happens. And I'm also hoping to have her on the show. Ultimately, Stevie Johnson's story is one of millions at this point that Brandon has told. He has a Patreon. Y'all can support it. It's patreon.com/, I think, either Honey, H-O-N-Y, or Humans of New York. It's so good. I am inspired by people who tell great stories. I'm inspired by people who start things that might seem simple but end up impacting the world. I'm inspired by people who use their gifts for the greater good. And Brandon Stanton's platform, Humans of New York, is everything that epitomizes good storytelling. And what happens when when we get creative and then just do something without expectation, it's blown up for good reason. How you can follow Humans of New York? They're on Facebook, facebook.com/humansofnewyork. On Instagram, it's @humansofny. And there's a Patreon that is where you can give, you know, something like even $5 a month, and you'll get even extra stories that are not posted on his social, or he'll go deeper on a story that he told. And that's patreon.com/humansofnewyork. Again, I think storytelling really allows us to humanize other people, people who might be people we'll never meet, who are completely different from us, who live on the other side of the world. And Humans of New York has proven that every single day, that with stories, we can change the world. So go follow it. You probably already are. But in case you aren't, you should. And now, my interview with Ty Beauchamp. She's dope. Ty, what up?
Lovey Ajayi. How are you, my love?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm wonderful, actually. It's a little chilly here in L.A., but, you know, chilly in L.A. is better than cold in Chicago.
I mean, listen. y'all just be disrespecting us, and we can't even say nothing to it. We just have to be like,
that part.
I'm like, you right. Yo, Rants fam.
Am I in the house?
You are in the house, Ty. You are in the building, okay? Rants fam, join me in welcoming the ever-talented, award-winning media personality, my girl, Ty Beauchamp, to the show. Hey, girl.
Hey, lovey. You know what? I am so happy to be with you right now. I can't even tell you. This has been a long time in the making. So I'm like, yeah, I'm here.
turn up. Yes, I'm excited. I've been looking forward to having a conversation with you on Rants for a while. And I want to start by giving people your bio so they know how epic you are.
Okay, well, thank you.
Yes. You might blush. It's okay. You're just awesome. It's cool. Ty Beauchamp is an award-winning producer, TV host, and creative consultant. Drawing on her passion and authenticity, Ty delights in helping brands tell meaningful stories that ignite consumer engagement. One of Ty's latest ventures is serving as the host and producer of Cleo TV's Lens of Culture, a 30-minute travelogue that highlights destinations throughout the diaspora and from a uniquely Black millennial's perspective. She's a New Jersey native and proud alum of Spelman College, passionate about women's empowerment and mentoring. This winter, Ty is launching Beyond Ready, an online e-learning and live events experience that provides confidence coaching and business development for women and men who seek to move with intention and purpose personally and professionally. Her practical tips and charismatic delivery were honed when she began her career at highly regarded media outlets like O, The Oprah Magazine, and 17. These experiences taught her early on how to tell stories that inspired audiences to think differently about themselves, leaving them feeling empowered and assured. Woo, girl, you are epic.
Oh, my God, wait a minute. I'm like, who wrote that? I'm like, where did that come from? Thank you, Lovey.
You've been around the block doing amazing stuff. So I usually kick off by asking my guests. So what did you want to be when you were growing up?
Girl, certainly not doing what I'm doing. I grew up outside of Newark in the Oranges, East Orange, I thought I wanted to be a doctor when I was younger, but I will tell you, I mean, you know, it's like the typical, you know, black, you know, my parents and my family are educators. So it was like, you're either going to be a doctor, a lawyer, a teacher. And that was really it. I did not know that I, you know, could actually write for the magazines that I love to read. And that all kind of came later. I will tell you, though, I had this very early experience when I was probably about four or so, because I started, you know, in church, you know, speaking in church and singing in the choir and those solos. I did have an early feeling that I would speak in front of people. But I didn't really know how to actualize that until later. And so, you know, I love fashion. I love storytelling. I had an imaginary friend until I was 10. So a little delayed in getting rid of Penelope. Penelope was with me for a long, long time. And so I think like having an imagination and then, you know, being in front of people speaking from church and you know, performing, it just was in me. And I loved fashion. And so later my mentor helped me to understand that I could actually not just necessarily be a model or be a designer in front, but I could actually tell the story of fashion and beauty. And so that led to my journalism career.
Did your parents support the imagination in you, like the little artist in you?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. My mother and my biological father were very young when I was born. Mm-hmm. And my mom always supported it, but my grandmother, Mary, like really got it. My other grandmother, Sarah, really got it too. I think my grandmother, Mary, interestingly enough, who just passed, she was a creative too. Like she produced all the church plays at her funeral. Someone was like, you know, there wasn't a church play if Ty wasn't in it. And I was like, wow, you're right. You're right about that. Cause she put on everything, the Tom Thumb wedding. She wrote the plays. She wrote poems. So I think my grandmother always appreciated it, and really valued it. And she just also let me be my quirky, interesting, you know, random, random self. And she celebrated it. So, yeah, I think some of them got it. But I don't think that being creative is for everyone to get. Mm. I think you have to have one person, you know, especially during your formative years, who sees it and gets it and celebrates it. But it's not going to be for everyone to get. I mean, Lovey, I'm sure. Like for you, did everyone get it?
No, I didn't even get it.
Yeah, exactly.
So when you were, let's say, 10, how were you? Like, what was little Ty like?
Oh, that's a good question. I was very opinionated.
Okay.
I had a thought about everything because I grew up as an only child, too. So I was around adults, including my grandparents and my mom, a lot. So I had an opinion about everything. 10-year-old Ty was curious. She was rambunctious. She also could be very reserved at times because I like to observe people, and I think I got that from being around my grandparents. So I would probably say there was like a real dichotomy about who I was. But, you know, interestingly enough, I had a conversation with one of my big cousins who I like adore. And she was just like, you were just like the kindest little kid, like you were just loving. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I don't think I've changed too much. I think I've gotten more opinionated the more I know. But at the same time, like, you know, as you get older, you have your opinions, but you're also, you also learn to be a little bit more open to other people's opinions. So, Little Ty is not so different from Big Ty, but I will say I'm 6 feet tall now. And I was at 10. Actually, though, at 10, I was 5'2". So I'm only...
Wait, you were 5'2 at 10 years old?
Yeah, I was 5'2".
How was that at school?
Not easy. Mm. Not easy at all. I mean, I had a size 10 shoe by the time I was in the fifth grade. It wasn't easy. It wasn't easy. I mean, luckily I went to small schools, and so I didn't really get bullied so much, but it was awkward. I mean, no one wants to be the tall, gangly girl at the end of the line. It would have been much cuter to be little Lovey at the front of the line. You know what I'm saying? Like, it would have been much cuter. I'm like, that would have been cute.
So basically you were already taking up space at that age.
Yeah.
Oh wow,
that's a really good way to put it. I don't think I thought that way, because it was hard. It wasn't always like super comforting, and I will say I was awkward until about age 14, 13. Then I was cool. Like, I became a little bit cooler. But
what changed?
There were definitely some. My eighth grade year, I went to public school. That helped.
Okay.
Real talk, though, that seriously did help, because I think it just opened my world to different environments. You know, I think sometimes, like, when you're sequestered and you're kind of kept in very, you know, formed environments, it limits, you know, your perception.
Right.
I mean, really, ultimately, it limits your perception. And so I think going to public school, I was able to kind of, like, extend myself outside of the boxes and the parameters that I had known. That had been really confining and strict and, you know, very specific. And, you know, I think I found a little bit more of myself because I was able to identify outside of the way that I had always been taught or shown to identify.
So how
does that make
you,
sense?
It does make sense. It does make sense, because basically your world expanded and you were able to kind of step outside of that quirky piece and just become Ty. So how did you maintain your confidence in the moments when you were like, whew, I'm the tallest person here? And it's weird. When it's not easy being different when you're young.
No, it's not. It's so funny. You know, I just did a TED talk and I talked about always feeling other. And not in a way that, you know, when people are like other, I wasn't like the awkward kid. I wasn't the awkward kid that was like off in the corner. Fortunately, because I was reaffirmed a lot at home. Like, my grandmother, my grandparents, and my mom, like, literally poured into me. And they put me in spaces, like, at church and dance class and ballet and piano and all that other stuff where I was really reaffirmed. So that helped. So I wasn't, like, awkward in the sense of, like, over in the corner reading my book,
right,
like, all day. Like, it wasn't like that. But I didn't become the cooler kid until I had that more robust experience. But I think, you know, I always felt some sense of other, mostly because I grew up in multiple home environments. I had my paternal grandparents' house. I had my maternal grandmother's house, and then I had my mother's house. And so I grew up going between worlds regularly as a kid, and I didn't know anything was different about it. Mm. And then, you know, to go to Spelman, you know, and I went to an all-girls small high school as well. You know, so then again, you see how those environments are really controlled in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
And then to go from Spelman, and historically all black college, where there are nothing but dynamic black women, smart black women, like, running the stuff. And then to go into the, you know, what is predominantly a white privileged world of magazine publishing, I was yet other again. Right. So I think being comfortable with recognizing that I didn't always align, but finding my voice in those spaces, and then, you know, growing into a person that realizes that there are different spaces that necessarily weren't created for you, but you're going to show up in them.
Come on.
And you got, you know, when you show up in them, you got to decide who you're going to show up as. Right. And having, you know, the opportunity to do that consistently, I think just really kind of nurtured me and helped me to build out that confidence. And now, I mean, I'm going to show up as my full self everywhere I go. You're going to get smart Ty. You're going to get stylish Ty. You're going to get business, you know, minded Ty.
You're going to get foolery. You're going to get the cut up. Like, you're going to get all of it.
I get the random the prayers that you, even though I might not always respond to it, they always come on time. But we'll get to that one. We'll get to that part later. So when you decided to go to Spelman, what was the choice? What made you say Spelman is a place I want to spend the next 4 years?
So Hillman, I mean, A Different True. World was obviously a huge part of the inspiration growing up in the 90s. So a couple of things. I had an older cousin that went to Spelman many years before me, and I just thought she was, like, amazing. And she was, like, a distant cousin, but, like, I just thought she was, like, a baddie. I was like, she's a badass. And then watching A Different World, and honestly, every Spelman woman I met while I was in high school, and then I went on a college tour eighth grade year too, but every Spelman woman that I met while I was in high school, I was just like enamored. I just thought that they were amazing. But crazy enough, and this is random, but this is also goes back to that spiritual piece. God showed up and showed out because, I had been in private school all my life. My mom was a single parent until she married my stepfather later, with the support of my grandparents. And so when it was time for me to go to college, I was like, I'm going to stay in state and go to Rutgers. Mm. And I had been recruited for basketball. I was a basketball player. So I got accepted to top schools, but they all wanted me to play basketball and they all wanted, you know, I would have needed some additional financial support. So I was like, I'm going to go to Rutgers. Lovey, when I tell you on high school graduation day,
yeah,
I had already taken the entrance exam and the placement test to go to Rutgers University in New Brunswick, also where my grandmother went. And on high school graduation day, the man who later became my mentor, a wealthy philanthropist also from Newark by the name of Ray Chambers, happened to be at my high school graduation, seeing a student who he had supported as a part of a larger program that he had created many years before me, who was also in my class. He happened to be there to see her graduate because she was a part of an early cohort, heard me speak, asked about me, and gave me a full scholarship to Spelman.
What?
So when I tell you, but for, yes, girl, yes.
What?
Yes. I kid you not. So I went to Spelman College and no loans. I took out one loan first semester. I paid that off, you know, 4 months after I graduated.
Wow.
I had very little loans, grants, and a full scholarship from.
You got to look at God.
Girl, all up in it, all up in the sauce.
Wow.
And I didn't even get a chance to meet him until a year and a half later. I stayed in touch with him, wrote him, kept him updated about, you know, my development and what was happening at school. And he really supported both with scholarships and in other ways through the programs that he created many, many young people. And I was able to develop a close relationship with him. He still is very much in my life. I ended up working with him and working for his family foundation and starting a program at his high school, alma mater in Newark. But God. So that's how I ended up at Spelman. But God.
Wow. That's amazing. That right place, right time. Your helper was in the room and found you.
Amen.
Girl.
Amen.
So when you
Amen.
Started Spelman.
But also, Lovey, that's the other thing about showing up consistently as who you are and doing the work.
Facts.
You know what I mean? Because
Facts.
we never know who is watching. You know, I think about the first time we met live and in person in Chicago. What was that, like 9 or 10 years ago?
Easily, yeah.
And you were just, the blog was just beginning to take off.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, like, you never know how these connections happen, you know?
And then we connected as fellow Capricorns who have birthdays like a day apart.
Exactly. And then I'm like, oh, my Capricorn sister, I love you.
And we've been bays ever since.
ever since.
So you also wanted to be a doctor. You're looking at a failed doctor here. Okay, I was supposed to be a doctor. That clearly didn't happen. When did your doctor dream end? Was it at Spelman or beforehand?
No, it ended at Spelman. When I was about to get an F in biology, I was like, oh. Yeah, the doctor track might not be Tybo Shum's calling.
listen, our stories are too similar because mine was chemistry 101 when I got that young D.
Yes, I was. You said it's a C or a B?
A D, girl, a D,
oh,
solid
a D.
D.
Okay.
I got the D.
Oh, you earned the D.
I earned that D.
I, I withdrew before I got the F. I was like, I said, I'm gonna take the W as in a loss and get my tail out of here. Because you know what? That was the other thing. I just kept thinking to myself, like, here I was fortunate to benefit from this full scholarship. And, you know, the terms and conditions weren't like, oh, you have to have a 4.0 or 3.5 to keep it. You just have to perform. And I was like, there's no way in this world I could, you know, mess up and get an F in biology. And then the other thing, Lovey, I don't know if you experienced this. I mean, because you're a talker, I'm a talker. I told you I had an imaginary friend until I was 10. When I was in that lab, like when I had to do makeup labs and it was only me in the lab with the Petri dish, I was like, this conversation ain't going to go too well. Like, I was like, I don't know how this is going to work. And so the combination of that almost F and the Petri dish and that white lab coat, I was like, I'm out.
You was like, I'm out. I can't do this. I can't do it. Mine was like, I actually made effort and I still got a D. I'm like, I'm not used to this. And I realized.
Were you like, you were like an A student and everything else.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I was like, I definitely had a come to Jesus moment with myself where I'm like, you know what? You don't even want to like, you don't even like hospitals. Just let this go.
You're like, those walls are too white.
Yes.
They're too sterile.
Yes.
Yeah.
And doctors make me nervous. So it's like, no.
So what made you want to be a doctor? Was it just the Nigeria? Like,
A lot of it was probably the Nigerianness of it all. And also just because, like, they've been calling me, dude, you're really smart, since I was like four, because I was the bookish kid. And I was like, I want to help people. So I'm thinking the way to help people is by making sure they're not sick. No, that was not it.
Yeah.
So when you dropped the doctor dream, what was your next move?
So I dropped the doctor dream. I went and actually spoke to my mentor. I went and had a meeting with Ray. And I should also say, while I was in high school, I was doing some modeling. Nothing major. I mean, commercial, but I was close enough to New York that I had some, you know, some gigs that I had there. And I always loved fashion. I mean, I think fashion was always a part of the way that I self-expressed in addition to speaking. Mm-hmm. And I was a writer. Like, I used to write like crazy, everything from poetry to short stories. I was just like really into it. And so I went and met with Ray, and he was like, well, have you ever thought about like combining your love of writing with fashion? Mm. And I was like, no. He was like, well, do you read magazines? I was like, my wall is plastered with Harper's Bazaar. Like, I love magazines. And, you know, I made a list of the magazines I was interested in working for, and he reached out to people that he knew at those places. And that's how I got my first internship the summer of my sophomore year. The summer of my sophomore year, I interned at Good Housekeeping magazine at Hearst. And that's when the bug bit me. I mean, it was crazy because I had grown up going to the city. I mean, growing up in the Oranges is so close, and outside of Newark is so close to the city. So I went to the city every weekend with my mom or with my grandma or with my aunt. But by the time I started interning there, I just thought I was grown. I was taking the train into work. Mm-hmm. I was hailing my own cab. I was so excited. And I just loved the energy and the pace of it. And I was also able to, you know, learn how to be creative, but in the business environment. And that, you know, that's hard as a creative. Most creative people only think about the creative process,
right?
And don't think about how you make it into a monetizable business. And I was fortunate with this internship to sit in business meetings as well as brainstorming meetings. I was fortunate to write and work directly under an editor in chief. And I was sold. I was like, this is where I want to be. And so that summer, I was like, I'm going to be an editor-in-chief of a magazine. And this was at the height of publishing, Lovey. Like, this is when magazines, like, I can honestly say this as an intern, when you were invited to an event, you got a car. You went in a car. It was amazing. So that was it for me. That was it.
So then what was your major?
I changed my major to English. So I went from biology to English. Selman is a traditional liberal arts college, so they don't have like a journalism or communications major. But the other beautiful thing about being in the Atlanta University Center or the AUC is that you can take classes at Morehouse and Clark. And at the time, Morris Brown was around as well. So you could, you know, cross register and take classes. So I took a lot of classes on Clark's campus, like for newspaper writing, outside of creative writing and, you know, storytelling. But I really loved I loved language and I just loved communication. So it ended up working out.
So when you graduated, what was your first job out of college?
Oh, my first job out of college was for this little magazine called, the Oprah Magazine.
Stop. You came out the gate. I can't deal with you.
yeah, man. I can't even tell you, Lovey. I've just been so blessed. Still, by far, I didn't stay in corporate very, very long. But, you know, I started at Oprah at the magazine. The magazine launched May 2000, and I started there, I want to say, June 26, 2000. So
wow.
I worked on the third issue of the magazine. Yeah, it was insane. Yeah, that was a whole moment. And you want to know what's so crazy, Lovey? I tell people this all the time. I did not realize how big it was. Because for me at this point, and also, you know, like, you're the person that's like working hard just to get the work done. Now, mm-hmm. I was grateful to be there. I was happy to be there. I was happy to have a job. My salary was $28,500 a year. By the time I earned overtime, but my first year of working, I probably made like $54,000, and
wow.
I thought I was balling.
You were balling. Fresh out of college?
I was balling.
Yes.
Yeah, I was doing all right. I was doing all right in 2000 for sure. But, you know, I was putting in the hours too. But, like, I didn't realize, I tell people, like, when you're 22 and fresh out of school, you ain't trying to live your best life. So I loved Auntie Oprah, right? And obviously admired her from afar and, you know, was so, I mean, at that time, Lovey, it was just a very specific time in the industry mm-hmm. and for that magazine in particular, where Oprah used to call us. She used to call the editors and I was an assistant, but I used to be able to speak to her on the phone and she was in the office once a month. Yeah, it was crazy. And I worked very closely with Gail, you know, I saw Gail in the office every single day. It was an amazing place to be to learn about not only journalism, but learn about women and how to empower women. And I tell people all the time, I'm very clear that had I started my career at another magazine title, like, and I had, by that time I had interned at Good Housekeeping and Harper's Bazaar. But had I started my career just hypothetically at a Vogue magazine versus at an Oprah magazine, I think my lens and my perspective on how to engage and empower women would be very different, right? I would have done it at Vogue with the lens of what was just high fashion, right? Mm-hmm. What was, mm-hmm. what the garment was about, what that piece was about, opposed to who was the heart and the spirit of a woman. Mm. And, you know, I think being able to work on a startup and a launch, which I was able to do again and again, really enabled me to understand, again, not only the creative process, but how you build a business, right? Because when you're at that early stage, you're trying to figure out not only what is exciting and interesting to you, but you have to figure out how that's going to connect with the audiences. The other thing is, like, you know, at a title like Oprah, and at this time, you know, in 2000, she had just, was just getting off of television. Everybody really saw Oprah, and they still do, but they saw at that time, like, as their friend. So women would call the magazine and they would send them pictures. Like, I'm trying to, you know, figure out how to deal with my hammer toe. I'm trying to figure out how to, and you had to call and have conversations with these women
wow.
because you were ultimately a representative of Oprah. It wasn't like being at this random entity. And so it taught me a lot. It taught me a lot, not only how to write and how to tell stories, but how to make it meaningful for women, how to make sure that every woman that read that magazine felt seen, heard, and understood. And then obviously how to show up as yourself, but recognizing that you're a representative of something and someone bigger.
I love the idea that your lens was able to kind of be solidified because of O Magazine. At that time, did you have other friends at, like, other magazines? Did you have to interact with other magazine staffers? How was the difference in the moments when you were in those different spaces?
Oh, my God, girl. So, you know, you know, fortunately coming from Spelman, there a lot of my friends went into other creative spaces, you know. So I had friends who went into music. My best friend went into education, so that was very different, and she was back home in Jersey. There were not many Black people in magazine publishing at that time. I mean, I started in 97 in magazines. There were a few of us, most of us that were Black and of color women were like at Essence or, and then Honey came around later. But we're at, or Ebony, we're at titles that were for people of color. There weren't a lot of us. And that was hard. What I will tell you, I remember distinctly feeling, not necessarily at Oprah, I didn't feel this at Oprah, but later when I went to 17, realizing that sometimes when you're in those spaces, you feel the crazy pressure of having to be the voice of all Black women. And you're like, well, we're not a monolith. And I don't know if I was able to communicate it then the way that I am now, because I was so young, right? And I did say it, and I remember saying it, like, you know, all Black women aren't the same. All Black girls are not the same, the same way that, you know, all others aren't the same. So there wasn't a, as much interaction. I mean, there was Tasha at Vibe. There was Tia Williams.
Tia.
I mean, we were like, and she was amazing. Tia was amazing to me because Tia was a few years older than I was or am, and Tasha. But there wasn't a large community, to put it, to be very plain.
How long were you at Old Magazine?
I was at O for almost 3 years. So I stayed there for 3 years. I was fortunate. I got promoted a ton. I bust my ass, worked really, really hard, and it was recognized. I mean, so that's the other piece. Like, sometimes you just don't know who is watching. And, you know, my editor-in-chief at the time, Amy Gross, and Gail, who I will always consider a mentor of mine because she mentored me so much, even when I decided to leave to go work on the prototypes that became Suede Magazine a couple of years later. Gail was the one that I went to and said, look, you know, I'm being offered this amount. And she's like, "But well, we can't match, you know," and she was just amazing, like really, really supportive of my journey always. Yeah, but it was a time, I just feel so grateful now to have had that as my first job, but not even just my first job, but just as an opportunity to learn.
So what made you realize it was time to move? How do you know when something that feels like home still is somewhere that you need to leave?
That's a really good question. I think at that point, I'll be honest, I knew it was time to leave because I knew that the type of work that I wanted to do, I couldn't fully do at that time at Oprah. By this time, I think I started to get really clear that I was super passionate about not only, you know, women's stories, but especially Black women's stories. And so I also was very passionate about fashion. At this point, I had moved over from fashion and beauty. I started out as fashion and beauty assistant. And when I left, I was beauty editor. So I moved over to the beauty department, where you write a lot more than in the fashion department. It's a lot more styling usually. And when Essence was working on launching what they called what would be like a Vogue for Black women, I was like, oh my God, I want to be a part of this. And you know, I met with Susan Taylor. I met with then Elaine Fluker, who was the interim editor-in-chief before Suede actually became Suede. Mm-hmm. And it was an opportunity to launch something new. And so I don't know if I would say I got everything I could have out of Oprah Magazine in terms of an experience, but I knew that there was a calling that couldn't necessarily be fully actualized and realized at that time. I also will say I was young and dumb too. but in the best possible way, like, you know, when you're 24 and now you're offered the opportunity to start what, you know, will be another legendary opportunity. I think some of it was ego. And then the other part of it was a recognition. I mean, 'cause it feels great to be wanted. Another part of it was like, what could I do in a new space? I had absolutely the most amazing experience at the Oprah Magazine, though.
Yeah, no, and I respect that. Because yeah, I think sometimes we'll get comfortable and then we'll stop growing. So you took a risk. So you started O Magazine when it was basically 2 months old. Then you start at Suede, where it's basically starting from scratch. You've been at
It wasn't even Suede. It didn't even have a name.
Wow.
It didn't even have a name. I worked on 3 prototypes of what became Suede. So I never even worked at the full title of Suede, because by the time they launched, I had left.
Wow.
Yep. Yep.
Girl, you're like, you know how Forrest Gump was like in all these historical pieces?
Uh-huh.
I always think about people who in real life are the real G's who moved in silence behind the scenes of a lot of things we love.
I also consider
myself Forrest Gump, so trust me, it's a compliment to me. But
wait, Lovey, in true Capricorn fashion.
in true Capricorn fashion, I'm like, listen, I feel like I'm Forrest Gump at times where I'm just like, how did I get here?
So, Girl, man.
Go ahead.
No, I mean, I have those moments, and I just feel what I will say, I think, because we're all chosen. Mm-hmm. I believe that. But I also believe when your actions and your intentions and your work ethic rise up to the level of being chosen, that's when people see.
Mm.
And so, you know, that was when Ray Chambers saw something in me in high school. That's when Ellen Levine and Michelle Huck, who I'm still in touch with, the human resource recruiter at Hearst, who hired me to be a part of the internship program at Hearst, who didn't have to take me because the internship program actually had been closed already.
Wow.
And it was a small internship of 20 people who saw me then. And then, you know, developing the relationship with Ellen, and then Gail and Amy Gross at Oprah, who saw me, and Oprah, who herself saw me. I remember, you know, the first time I met Oprah when she came into the magazine while I was there, you know, or the people, my beauty director who hired me, my fashion director. And then, you know, when Susan Taylor saw me and Elaine Fluker and asked me to come over to what became Suede. And then when I went back to Hearst at 17, when they bought 17 magazine and relaunched that magazine with Atusa Rubinstein and the, you know, the team at 17. I do believe that when you know you're chosen, you do the work, you do it with integrity, intention, and purpose. You will be seen, you know, and called into a place and a space. Like, who you are, Lovey, is not by accident.
Mm.
You know, yeah. Not who you are on the daily basis, who you are in the world is not by accident. You know, your voice has been being honed all these years. You know, the people that you poured into, the people that, you know, that you studied and understood, and this is not by accident.
God is good. And you and I talk about faith. We talk about religion. We're both Christian. We understand the role of God in our lives. To me, it sounds like your story, similar to mine, is God ordering your steps.
Girl, every single day. And yeah. I could even go back even further. I mean, I share this very openly, you know, but for the grace of God and my grandparents loving my mother and my father the way that they did and choosing to love me so that my mother and my father could go into college, like live their lives, you know, but for, you know, so I'm very, very clear, but that's why I also, I always try and walk with a level of humility and grace.
Yes.
Because I, in addition to the work that I do, I know it's not all me.
Yes.
You know, it's not all me.
You also walk all. With the space, like, so I think humility and gratitude go hand in hand. You can't have one mm-hmm. without the other. How do you basically think about your life when you are in the quiet moments? What do you do as you're reflecting?
Well, let me just tell you this. Let me talk about the times when it's not easy.
Come on, let's do it. Let's do it.
Because that's the other thing. I can talk about all of the blessings and amazingness that I've been grateful to experience, but you can't talk about the blessings and not talk about the grace you're shown
yes.
when things are not feeling as blessed.
Come on, let's do it.
Okay. So in my quiet times right now, and in the quiet times that I've had over the course of the years, when I was transitioning from being an editor, when I left 17 magazine after being there only a year, after being the first African-American and the youngest beauty director in history appointed at the magazine when I was 25 years old.
Wow.
You know, this is before Instagram. So this is before the story could be told in this way, right?
Yeah.
And then that quiet moment when I was like, something ain't right here. Something's not working for me here. And I didn't have the confidence about what was going to happen next, right?
Mm-hmm.
So those quiet moments sometimes are, teach me, oh God, you know, place me where I need to be placed and give me the clarity of mind about how I need to move, because I don't always have the answer. I knew that that wasn't it. So you asked about how did I know it was time to move on from O?
Yeah.
How did I know it was time to move on from 17? I knew that my spirit was not being filled. I knew that I was filled, and I knew that I wasn't being used to the utmost and to the highest ability. And it was like, all right, where do I go from here? I didn't have, you know, it was unpopular. I left 17 magazine in this heralded title and actually was told by a mentor of mine, you're on your way to being editor in chief. Don't leave. But I knew it wasn't serving me. And so, you know, I think those moments when no one is watching, it's about you being real honest with yourself. I'm going to tell you, girl, one quality that irks the living daylights out of me in people or in circumstances when there is not self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And those quiet moments for me are when I have to be intentionally and deliberately and painfully self-aware. So that means I'm not going to just tell myself how great I am. I'm going to tell myself, like, you know, what it is that I need to develop and grow in order to get to the next level and to the next place. So that's what happens in those quiet moments, you know. It's being positively and intentionally self-aware in order to grow and to evolve.
That's real. And how do you use your sisterhood and your community to hold you up, to hold you accountable? You're really big about sisterhood. So let the people know about how your friends, what role they play in your
life. It's so funny. I was with one of our girls last night. I had dinner with Justina last night.
Oh, that's my boo.
Oh, yeah. I love her so much. Well, first of all, you have to have spaces where you can be authentically you.
Yes.
You know, and fully you, without the lights, the camera, the action, without any of, you know, any pretense. You have to have those spaces. My sisterhood is so important to me because the days when I don't have it, I reach out and say I don't have it, and I get confidence there. I also find that my sisterhood is so important to me because I'm fortunate. Like, my sisterhood are the baddies of the world. And so I can look to them and draw inspiration, but I also can, you know, be very honest and vulnerable and say, look, this is where I need help. That has been critical for me, especially over the last, I will say the last 4 years have been, my leverage up time and, you know, me growing and evolving. And, you know, I've had to lean on people. I've had to say, here's what I need. And the sisterhood for me allows me the space to be honest and vulnerable and transparent. And they also allow me to be fully me. It's like what I said earlier. It's like, sometimes it's a kiki, sometimes it's a crack up. Then when I'm like, oh, we got to pray. Like for real, add color.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Let's talk about
Ad amazing, color. Right? Ad Color. Amazing. Lovey gave an amazing talk at Ad Color, and I had the opportunity to host the conference. Lovey also hosted the gala, and our girl Jovi was there, and I hadn't seen Jovi at the time she's expecting, and I knew she was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
She had told me some time ago, so I was so excited to see her for the first time, see her and George for the first time. And she had just gotten off a plane. And my immediate reaction was like, girl, let's go into prayer. That's what the sisterhood is about.
Yes.
That's what the sisterhood is about. Who's going to lift you up and support you? And that's why also, let me just tell you, I don't tolerate fake friends either.
Amen. Who has time for it?
Girl, guess what?
Has time?
Girl, I listen, your fakeness will not affect my realness.
Ooh.
So
come on. Yes.
Your fakeness will not affect my realness. And so that's when you got to move people very nicely and gently over to the side, because life is too short.
So
life is too short.
3 years ago when the day that my book hit the New York Times bestseller list was also the day of the Ad Color Awards. On that day, I was nominated for the Rockstar Award.
I remember. I was there.
You were the one who actually announced my name.
Yep.
And I have the pictures of me and you hugging like crazy. There is so much joy being able to experience some of the best moments of my professional life with some of the best people I know. And I think about how fortunate I am. Like, in the moments when I'm saying prayers, I'm thanking God for the opportunity and the favor to be able to experience this joy with folks who I love. And if y'all listen to this, Ty is literally one of the best people I know. Like, I will get a random text message prayer from Ty, and I might be running myself ragged on that day and going from one place to another so I don't reply. Trust me, I read it, and I said amen. And I'm like, how does she know when I needed to hear it?
Well, thank you. Here's the thing, though, Lovey. Like, the other thing is when I connect deeply.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's because I've never wanted to be, you know, of the world that we live in. Like, I'm going to be in it, but I'm not going to be of it. And so when I connect deeply, like, I don't send those to every single person every single day. It's the day that you come to me. It's the day that I feel your energy and your spirit. It's the day when I'm like, oh my gosh, Lovey has this going on, or and I just want you to know. So I appreciate that it's received, and I don't ever expect responses. I tell people that all the time. Like, I also do that so that you can have the space that you need to sit in whatever you're sitting with, but just to know that you're being thought of and loved.
And that's real. I think about friendship, and I think, you know, a lot of times people think about people get to talk to each other every day. Everybody too busy for that. Like, people too busy. I think friendship is standing in those gaps, the gaps that you don't even realize are there. And
girl, you got a husband now anyway.
Come on, listen, girl. Okay, I'm trying to get my whole life together. I'm over here trying to adult on all types of levels, okay? So I always appreciate that. I'm like, yo, Ty is a real one. Ty's a real one.
Listen, I'm like, look, I want you to, and you and your husband are so, oh my God, he's my Morehouse brother, right?
Yeah, he a Morehouse brother.
You done found yourself a man of Morehouse, huh?
Yes, and he's a Morehouse brother through and through.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. How are you adjusting to married life? What's the adjustment for you?
It's not, you know what? I thought it would be jarring. You know, for some reason, I thought I'd wake up one and be like, oh my God, I'm somebody. I mean, I still have moments where I'm just like, I can't believe I'm actually somebody's wife. I can't believe I am grown up enough to be called somebody's wife. But overall, though, it's cool. I think we'd already taken each other very seriously, and we'd already been looking at each other as like lifelong partners.
Partners, that's right.
So it wasn't like an automatic like switch of, oh my God. And now I realized that I'd already been in this space in my head, and he had to. Honestly, and that's why I decided to, that's part of the reason why I was like, okay, I want to slow down. You know, like, I spent so much of the last 7-8 years building my career. I focused mostly on my career. Now I'm switching, like, okay, what does it look like to actually focus mostly on my friends and my family and my husband and just being, not missing the moments that matter. You know that.
You want to know what? Man, listen, that is so powerful and so important. I've actually been talking to, after I froze my eggs and, you know, people know that I was a caregiver to my grandmother, been talking a lot to younger women about the importance of being clear and intentional about looking at your life holistically and fully.
Yes.
Because I know for me, and I hear you, you were intentional. You're like, the last 7 years I was focused on, you know, work and business and building, but you also were not saying no to relationships.
Right.
And not inviting it in. It may have been the majority of what you were spending your time and your energy on, but you were not saying, okay, I don't need a partner or what have you.
Right.
So many of us as career focused women, especially as career focused Black women, we lean all the way in to one area and don't spread out enough into those other areas, and then wonder why, you know, like, you know, for me, you get to a certain point in your life where I'll be 42 in January, and it's like, where are you at now? Oh, but girl, you have not been planting the seeds the way that you should have been. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so I think I celebrate you also for recognizing the seasons, but as you recognize the seasons, sometimes in the winter, you still need your raincoat, right? And so you,
you know what I'm saying?
It's like you're taking all of those moments with you and just having clarity about that. So I want you to take some time off and, you know, take it easy and have all the fun for all of us.
Yes, indeed. Yes, ma'am. Listen, look, and you and I even talked about it. We talked about, like, the whole idea of, yo, we've been traveling like crazy. All the stuff that's going on. I think one thing I did in the middle of all my busy in terms of trying to maintain my relationships to actually be honest about my capacity with my friends. So I didn't just disappear and was unavailable to them. I'd be like, yo, for the next 6 weeks, I'm traveling like crazy. I'll be back this weekend. Let's go to brunch. So in between my crazy, busy jumping on planes, I also try to make sure that people who are my day ones and people who I love knew that, listen, when I finally do have some pause, me and you, let's do it.
Yeah. And I think, but you also granted yourself real grace and the space to recognize that you don't need to do it all the time.
Yes.
Because that's the gotcha. So many of us be like, okay, you know, all things to all people all the time. That's not realistic.
It's not.
And I think that that's a narrative that we have to stop telling ourselves and grant ourselves grace to be like, no, here's how I'm going to, everything can be a priority at the same time.
Facts.
Everything is not a priority.
Facts.
Right. And so just being honest and real with yourself about what those priorities are and creating your, you know, your top three at any given moment. And then, like you said, communicating what that is. So I'm communicating very openly and honestly,
yes,
that love is a priority for me. Not in 2020, love is a priority for partnership and life and in business is a priority for Ty Beauchamp as of today, yesterday,
I
the
love
day
it.
Before yesterday,
Look,
last
speak
week,
it.
The week before that. No, I'm kidding.
Yo, speak that for real. So love, I'm glad I actually know that because listen, I'm gonna keep my eye out. If you get
a
text message from me and I'm like, Ty, I think I might know somebody who might be good for you, go ahead and reply back. And I'm going to keep my eye out for that.
Exactly that. And, you know, and I'm clear, like the priorities are that. And the priorities are also having stability and time and travel. Because as you said, being on planes every week, it is such a blessing. And I thank God for like the opportunity to go and connect and meet people and share and exchange and grow and learn and earn at the same time. But it's not easy.
No.
It's not easy.
So
yeah, it's not easy.
What project are you working on now that you're most passionate about?
So there are a couple. I mean, I'm really excited about Beyond Ready because I've informally mentored and coached so many over the course of the last almost 20 years of my life and career, that I think this will really kind of provide a space and opportunity for me to reach more people and connect with more people about building confidence on how to pivot in your career, how to pivot in your life. I mean, because when you think about my career trajectory, I've made quite a few pivots.
Right.
And I think a lot of people, you know, look to me for that. And I have done so with confidence. That doesn't mean it was easy, but I've done so with confidence. You know, I try and motivate people to overcome fear. And so I'm excited to share those principles and how you do that. And then I've been on this crazy wellness journey too. So a lot of people have asked me about the journey to wellness. And so Beyond Ready will be a platform for me to, share insights and wisdom on helping people to do and actualize for their lives in that way. So I'm excited about that. There are a couple other projects I can't exactly share, but
okay.
I've been in talks with networks and platforms about, because when you go in front of the camera, people don't realize that you're behind the scenes creating. So I have three projects that I've created myself and that we've been pitching and we're getting some amazing feedback now. And then who knows, you know, there are, you know, I work with brands pretty consistently, both as an ambassador and a consultant, but there might be some movement with a particular brand that I might work with more closely. Ooh. So we'll see.
And then you also co-host a Cleo TV travelogue show with my boy Elton, who, fun fact, the graphic for Rant and Randomness, that photo of me, Elton did that photo. And he's
no
just
way!
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Oh, yeah. Cleo, listen, Lens of Culture, and then I'm sorry that I didn't mention it. It's because, you know what's so crazy with Lens of Culture?
What?
We shot that from April through August.
Oh, my gosh.
And so, you know, when you're shooting, you're all the way in it. We shot 12 episodes, and so hopefully we'll get a season two. And then so that would be starting to work on that sometime in the spring. But Elton, girl, Elton is my boo for life.
I love Elton.
That show, honestly, is amazing because it afforded me the opportunity to travel and now to share, you know, my love of travel with the world. But Elton was one of my greatest blessings this year. And I knew Elton for years, but we had never really deeply connected. But now, you know, when you travel with somebody and you be all up in the mix with somebody, you really get to know them. And Elton is a special egg, and he's just been such a blessing. And I like to say that Lens of Culture is kind of like Anthony Bourdain, parts unknown, meet girls trip with your favorite guy friend.
I love it. I love that.
Yeah. He's a kiki, so we have a moment.
He's a good time. He's just brilliant. He's a brilliant creative.
He is.
Yeah. So I always love to ask people, as you are doing all of these things and trying to, you know, be the best person you can be, what are you doing for self-care?
Oof. Oh, well, the wellness journey has been real for me and mm-hmm. the fitness journey has been real for me. I was an athlete in high school and I've always been super athletic, but I had fell off. And I think transitioning from New York to LA and being a caregiver, my self-care is hiking and working out. I do that almost daily. I probably work out 5 to 6 times a week. Like today I did, before I got on with you, I hiked Runyon and I went to the gym.
Girl, I just came from the gym. I think it's trash, but continue.
I think the gym is trash. I don't like the gym. Like, girl, it really feeds my entire energy. Mm-hmm. When I don't work out, I'm a different person. I really am.
Okay.
I really am. So I realize that it's a part of my mental well-being to do it. The other self-care thing for me is I started therapy not too long ago.
Amen. Like
and that's an expensive self-care moment. But
yes, it is. Therapy is not cheap.
I'm like, dang, really? I got to write this check. So that is it. And I spent intimate time and great time with my girls. Oh my God, I went to this amazing place, Lovey. Are you like the outdoors?
Depends on what you mean by like.
Depends
on what you think, what you mean by like.
Okay.
If it's warm outside, I don't mind the outdoors.
Okay. All right. So you prefer the beach. You're not like
a
woods girl.
So where'd you end up going?
I went to this place called Blackberry Mountain. It's in Tennessee. There's Blackberry Farms and Blackberry Mountain. So one girlfriend and I, she had like made this reservation a year and a half ago. It's outside of Knoxville. And when I tell you, we were there for 3 days. We went to the spa. We walked in the woods. We worked out. We just sat down and relaxed. It was, so that, those are my real self-care moments. Yeah, it was amazing. It was amazing. I'm trying to figure out how to plan a retreat there. So you'll get an invitation for that.
You know what?
But yeah,
I can be peer pressured to doing stuff like that. I can totally be peer pressured to doing it.
But I got to peer pressure you like
if I know really, if I know my girls is going, I don't like to have FOMO, which is fear of missing out. So if I know all y'all going, I'd be like, fine, I'm gonna come.
And then you get there, you become the ringleader. But I can't even tell you, it was just so amazing just being there. And, you know, I also went to, have you ever been to Joshua Tree or
no,
Tom
Desert? But I've heard of it. I was supposed to go last year. I ended up making it.
You have to make your way out there. It's sometimes, you know, self-care is doing nothing. Sometimes self-care, like, you know, everyone's on this big self-care thing, like go get a manicure, go get a pedicure. Sometimes self-care is sitting your ass down and doing absolutely nothing and being cool with it.
And being fine with it.
Being fine with it. So I don't know if it's the wisdom in me, but I'm like, you know that song, Turn Down for What? I'd be like, turn down for everything.
For everything. I'd be like, turn down
under
for,
the sun.
Yes, turn everything. Down. I am in a turn down mode.
Exactly.
Me and my auntie Robe, we be living our best lives.
I know that's right. I know that is right. Turn down for everything.
Everybody needs an auntie robe. Do you have an auntie robe, by the way?
I don't.
Ty, you don't have an auntie robe?
I don't.
Oh, I got to get you an auntie robe then. I'm going to text you so I can get your address because I'm going to send you an auntie robe. I feel like every woman needs an auntie robe that she just
puts on. And tell me what makes it so special. Tell me what
you know
makes it so special.
It don't even matter what robe it is. It's just a robe that you put on once you are in the house that just automatically makes you feel at peace. You put it on, you feel warm, plush. You take whatever, if it's wine, if it's coffee, if it's hot chocolate, if it's tea, and you just sit on the couch and this robe just wraps you up in love.
You're like, this is my snuggle bunny.
Yes.
See, yes, I send me the robe and also package that with, I'm a mess. Package that with some eligible person.
You know what? Because then y'all can have matching auntie and uncle robes one day.
Exactly. Yes. What I need is a couple's auntie and uncle robe.
A couple. You know what? We're going to get the auntie robe first. And okay. Then we're going to get the uncle and then the uncle robe.
Okay, perfect. Look, listen, we're putting it out there.
We're putting it out there. This time next year, I'm going to be like, I can't get in touch with Ty because Ty is wrapped up under her boo. And I'm be like, I don't mind. I don't mind. I'll see her in 3 months. I'll talk to her in 3 months. I don't mind it.
Listen, I am here for it. See, that's what you call a real friend.
Look, we speak life. We speak life. We speak what exactly. We'll be. Okay, we will
Amen.
Speak what we'll be. Because, look, Ty is a hot babe. And
thank you.
Look, I'm going to act like this is your, what do they call those things? Because, you know, millennials won't know it. Well, young millennials. What are they the classifieds?
You're doing my profile.
Your profile. Yes. Ty
right.
is tall, gorgeous, stunning. Okay. Noir pixie dust. Full of light. Intelligent.
Yep.
Caring.
Yep.
Thoughtful.
Yep.
Funny as shit.
Yep.
And just like, again, fine. Lord.
Yep.
The lady is
all
a just hot babe. Just team scata them. That's Ty. Listen.
All of it.
Listen.
All of it.
And how
so,
do people...
Look,
what's up?
So we gonna work on that profile. I'm going to take the auntie robe. And then we're also... Actually, no, I think we need both the auntie and the uncle robe. Because then you put the uncle robe in place.
Yes.
See, look, that's what you call manifesting.
Manifesting.
So that's the other thing that I'm real clear about. Like, that self-care is I spend time in meditation and visualization. Because I realize none of this is going to happen by accident.
That's real.
None of it is going to happen by accident. So thank you for the auntie robe and uncle robe in advance.
In advance. I got you. I even know the right brand for it. Don't worry. You're going to put it on you and be like, oh, okay. When it's going to be a different color. I got you. I'm excited
Yay.
About this. I'm excited about
Yay.
This. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Ah, this
Yay.
Is so good. So how do people find you, Ty?
You can find me at... Taibochamp.com, TaiBeauchamp.com, and on Insta and Twitter and all the things at Taibo, TaiBeau. Yeah, and I'm easy to find. And I'm also one of those people that respond to people too. So, yeah. Yeah.
I'm so glad you came on Rants and Randomness.
Oh. I'm so happy you brought me on. Thank you, Lovey. Lovey, let me just tell you this. You energize me. So you are also the sister friend who we don't speak as often, but our text messages are legit and real.
Yes.
And just seeing your movement makes me happy and it's inspiring. So you keep going.
Oh, thank you. Oh, that means
and whatever that looks like for you.
Oh,
whatever that looks like for you.
I appreciate you for that. Thank you.
I love you.
Love you so much.
Thank you.
Bye, boo.
Have a great day.
Bye.
Ciao, ciao. Bye.
Yo, shout out to Ty Beauchamp for joining me. Y'all, follow her on Instagram and Twitter. She's at Ty Beau, TaiBeau. Yo, make sure you go on her platform, comment, let her know you loved her interview. When people come on Rants and they get your feedback, they love it, and I love it. So thank you for doing that in advance. And subscribe to Rants and Randomness on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, wherever you prefer to get it. And please rate it. If you leave a review, you never know. It just might be featured on the show. Also, much love to Chicago Recording Company, where I record this podcast. And as always, you can follow me on social media. I am @Lovey everywhere. See you on the next episode.